Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today, as always, is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy, well, as we're recording this, happy Labor Day. Hopefully some of you guys are off and enjoying the day, and, you know, if you're out in the East, some good weather. Happy game week. It's week two, but week one for us.
Week one for most. I don't know what we're really calling this season.
ESPN's been referring this to as week two. They called this past week week one, so.
Whatever.
I don't know if they're like the be-all end-all, but.
I mean, they're broadcasting most of the games. I feel like they kind of drive the freight on this.
That's fair.
But yeah, I guess we'll call it week two. We'll call it ACC kickoff in this case. Most of the teams are kicking off this week, aside from right now, at least, NC State and Virginia Tech, who are not kicking off after a coronavirus issue with NC State and testing. I think, Dan, that's the only game that's been moved so far, right?
I think so, off the top of my head. I don't think there's another.
All good. Hopefully. I mean, I don't think our game joins the list, if only because I feel like Syracuse has done a pretty good job with it of late.
UNC cleared out their camp. No, I'm saying, well, UNC cleared out their campus after the big outbreak in August, so that'll allow them to probably have an easier time of things, because that's how we're doing college football this year. Just, like, get all the kids off campus and charge them all their tuition, and then also don't pay the football players who are risking their health to play. It's a
pretty
good
cool
setup.
Stuff.
It's dope. It's a great setup. I love it.
More on that in several articles this fall, I'm sure. But yeah, we're going to talk plenty about Syracuse, North Carolina. First and foremost, though, why don't we talk a little bit about the NFL roster cuts over the weekend. Syracuse players, we had seven of them make NFL rosters. Most of them were expected. One of them was a surprise. The list, for those that didn't see it on Saturday, Chandler Jones and Justin Pugh both make the Arizona Cardinals. Again, expected given their contracts. Riley Dixon made the New York Giants. Once again, that was not a surprise. Zaire Franklin hasn't put up like huge numbers for the Colts, but I feel like he's become like a key part of that team. And he's been a great sub for them, and he's been a guy that like they really value. So I think it wasn't a surprise to see him on the roster once again. Alton Robinson made the roster for the Seahawks after being drafted in the fifth round this year. Sterling Hoffrichter makes the Falcons roster after being drafted in the seventh round this year. Both of those were, I think, expected for the most part. I think Hoffrichter was seen as the heir apparent at punter. And then the surprise here, undrafted free agent Tristan Jackson, who many kind of doubted his decision to declare early after last year's kind of breakout season for Syracuse, makes the roster for the Rams. All around, like still not, I still love to see more Syracuse players in the NFL, but I'd say seven's better than it's been.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to have a couple guys really ingrained. Obviously, the two, well, at least Ditz, and I expect Hoffrichter to be, you know, also really good at the NFL level. Pugh and Jones Jones, one of the best pass rushers in the league. Pugh's a pretty ingrained starter. Zaire, as you said, like they seem to really value him in the Colts. He was kind of one of the vocal leaders of their offseason social justice push, which is impressive for like a former, was he a seventh rounder or undrafted? I think
he was
undrafted.
Was he seventh round? That's a good question.
In any case,
I feel like he was seventh round. Let me double check that.
Either way, like a guy who, like, you know, you have doubts about even making a team, and now he seems to be a pretty, you know, solid contributor there. Plus, like a guy that clearly the other players look to as a leader in some facet. And then great news about Alton seems like he had a really good offseason. But even so, a guy going in the third day of the draft is no guarantee to make the roster. And obviously, he sounds like he impressed during the summer. And then Tristan's, had a really good draft process. It was kind of a slight surprise that he didn't go in the seven rounds, but it's cool to see him hang on in, getting through roster cuts, especially now when they all happen at once and you have like 30 guys dropping off the team in one wave, pretty much is really tough. So cool for him. That's a team that spreads the ball around and throws the ball a lot. And, you know, without Todd Gurley this year, I wouldn't be surprised if they pass the ball even more. So hopefully he gets some run out there.
Yeah, agreed. I really like his opportunity kind of long-term to establish himself in LA. Some players that didn't make the cut for the week. Kendall Coleman didn't make the Colts. Evan Foster didn't make the Niners. That was actually a surprise, especially after they signed him to a three-year deal just like a couple weeks ago. I'm not sure what the financial implications of that are for the Niners, how much was guaranteed and all that. But Foster is somebody who could potentially catch on practice squad. Akota Martin was cut by the Cardinals, but it seems like he'll be suiting up for the Cardinals on the practice squad anyway. And Chris Slayton, after not making the Giants roster, will go to Buffalo and be on the practice squad there. That was all I saw over the weekend. That list is kind of in addition to a few players that were cut earlier in the offseason, Evan Adams, Jamal Custis. Evan Adams from the Ravens, Jamal Custis from the Steelers, Steve Ishmael from the Colts, and Sean Riley from the Patriots were all cut earlier this offseason.
Yeah, I think that's the list I saw so far. I saw Coda was like, I think, the most recent news. So, you know, hopefully this practice squad dies, play well. Obviously, they're getting paid to play football in some capacity, so things would certainly be worse. But definitely a nice step up from this most recent draft class slash just Syracuse class in general. So good to have a couple other guys. We'll hopefully stick in the league for years to come.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about after the NFL draft earlier this year, just some, we could see like a good list of names join the next few years. Guys like Andre Sisco, Trill Williams, Afitu Melifonwu. You know, maybe you see some of the offensive linemen. I mean, people have floated Service's name around. I think that's a possibility. Maybe Blight's down the road. Really don't know like what he's going to turn into for Syracuse. We still don't know DeVito really. I think there's some questions based on play from last year, but I think if this year's line, and we'll get to that, looks better and he has time to throw, I think you could see DeVito start to kind of rise into those sort of conversations. Kingsley Jonathan's a guy who's just an athletic freak. There's numerous others, but I feel like those would probably be like the names to watch out for this year, at least. And some of those guys will have eligibility left after 2020 as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's there's a lot to learn about basically this whole roster, aside from like Sisto, who, you know, will go in some capacity probably pretty early. But even guys like Trill and Melifonwu, like, so can certainly get there. I think they're among the more talented players, and I would certainly bet on them getting an opportunity. But, it, you know, there's still work to be done, and having a big year this year will go a long way, I think.
Agreed. Dan, why don't we talk a little bit about that depth chart that we were kind of alluding to earlier? That was dropped on Monday. So
it's an adventure.
It's an adventure. There's a lot of choose your own ending kind of stuff going on here. There's been speculation about numerous players for weeks now, from Abdul Adams and Jarvin Howard in the backfield to Tywell Richards in the linebacker spot. And the offensive line concerns as well, that some injuries, some holdouts, whatever they may be. Instead, we end up with a weird kind of mismatch. Like, honestly, like, I don't think, other than a couple positions here and there, I'm not super concerned or shocked necessarily by what's transpired here. However, and we'll kind of go position by position. There are some like alert signs that if things don't clear up by mid-year, it could be a very rough season. So quarterback, obviously, Tommy DeVito's entrenched as the starter. Rex Culpepper will back him up. Running back, however, as mentioned, no Jarvin Howard, no Abdul Adams. I'm not sure if that's for the season or not. Dino didn't necessarily like provide any info there. And this depth chart hasn't really provided any info there, at least to my knowledge. But it sounds like opting out was what a lot of people had speculated. So that means that Juwan Jordan will be the starter. Markenzie Pierre will be the backup to him. And knowing how this offense has worked in previous years, that probably means we see plenty of both. Dan, how do you think this changes the running game now without Adams and Howard, who seemed like they were a little bit more suited to kind of, you know, mash things between the tackles and start to wear down, you know, defensive interiors?
I think it puts a lot of onus on Markenzie Pierre, who is probably going to have to inherit that between the tackles run ability, especially because now we have Chris Elmore playing starting left guard, which is probably not what we wanted. You know, good for him for making what, a third or fourth position change and like learning offensive line in an offseason. Like, that's, you know, a solid. I mean, he's obviously like a really good teammate, everyone loves him, but it's probably not what you want to have a guy who, I mean, maybe he played off the line in high school, but hasn't really played it since then. That's not ideal. Juwan Jordan, I think we're both really impressed with. We talked about it for our preview a couple weeks ago. I'm more worried about the offensive line. I think the left guard situation is pretty onerous. Not only do we not know about Bleich, but Dakota Davis is missing off the depth chart as well. I don't know if we have any more info on that, if that's an opt out or what, who knows. But yeah, like, I think there are pieces here that are good. We like Bergeron, we like Service at left tackle, Vettorello at center, all pretty, you know, potentially pretty serviceable. Tisdale, and then the Elmore thing, maybe Pat Davis slides into that spot if Elmore can't cut it, but the guard situation is rough, and that's I worry more about that than the running back situation, honestly. At best, like, a running back should have been a positive for this team and a strength of this team. So it's not good that we have our top two backs out, but I kind of bullish on the two guys we had behind them anyway. But that was more with like a fully, you know, powered offensive line, which obviously we do not have at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, I think that with my one concern on the running back front is kind of like what you said, there's just not, we don't have the sort of power back, and yes, Pierre is about the same size as Howard, as Adams, but we haven't necessarily seen, you know, a ton of production from him. He also hasn't had a ton of opportunities though. In 2019, Pierre just had 5 carries for 6 yards. Back in 2018, he had 8 carries for 35 yards. 2017, 25 carries, 89 yards. I mean, maybe with more consistent work, he can look like an every down back, but realistically, you know, Jawar Jordan and that speed is going to kind of drive the bus there. And then that becomes a little bit of a concern based on how this offense has run itself in recent years. A lot of runs between the tackles, a lot of dives. That's going to take a toll on a speedy back, and it's also going to be very hard for a speedy back to do that on a week-to-week basis. Like, you know, Mo Neal kind of turned himself into someone who could be a between-the-tackles runner over time, but that wasn't something he was doing right out the gate. And I think that, you know, Jawar Jordan is a smaller back than Neal was as a freshman. So I'm skeptical there, but I'm even more skeptical because of the reasons that you kind of laid out. Having, you know, a lot of questions at guard, like the fact that Elmore, Pat Davis, and Darius Tisdale are the only guards even on this depth chart. Pat Davis is listed as the backup at both left and right guard, is incredibly problematic. Darius Tisdale hasn't taken I don't think he's taken a snap. He's really inexperienced at one guard position, Elmore obviously at the other. Something that seemed like it was going to be a bit of a bounce back strength after a rough most of the season last year now turns into a concern once again. And I think the interior line issues, you know, could really sink this run game, where if we at least had the line in place, you could say, okay, maybe Syracuse is able to run the ball as they normally want to in this offensive scheme. But I'm definitely a lot more concerned now.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a major issue for the pass game as well. Last year, DeVito was pretty under siege for most of the season, but now...
Especially on the interior.
Especially on the interior. And if you ever watched, like, anyone play the LA Rams, like, if you have an interior pass rush, it's, like, really disruptive because, like, you can adjust for a really good defensive end in some ways. If someone's getting bull rushed through the middle, that's a major, major issue. Maybe that won't be as big a thing with UNC's three-man front this week, but down the road for sure. And then we also have two pretty inexperienced running backs who will be tasked with picking up the slack in the passing game as blockers as well. And we talked about it 2 weeks ago. One of the big issues with having young backs, while they can probably run the ball pretty well if they're talented, the blocking is what comes along and adjusting and picking up signs and signals and you know, being a vocal leader from the backfield in pre-snap. All these things are really difficult for a young back to get, like, right off the bat in their college career. And these guys are just not going to be as good in all likelihood than the two veterans that we seem to that we don't seem to be having available, at least at the start of the season. And now the fact they haven't opted out, I mean, that we haven't heard they've opted out, they haven't said it publicly, like, maybe there's a chance they rejoin us a couple weeks in. Maybe they're waiting to see the protocols in place and whatnot, but I wouldn't bet on it. So yeah, it's certainly not what we thought we were getting entering the season, but that's so much of this whole situation anyway. So we shall see what it looks like this weekend, because it's not an easy first test.
No, not at all. And we'll kind of get into North Carolina game in the second half of the podcast here. Wanted to kind of circle back quick to wide receivers Then we can head to the defensive side of the ball on the step chart. Taj Harris, obviously, the top starter on the outside for Syracuse. And then, also, am I reading this right? That was he always this light? Taj Harris, I got at 6'2", 164.
I feel, I was thinking that as well. I feel like he's always listed below what he like. He doesn't look that light because that's a small player. But that also, I mean, that even for him, that seems below what we.
I'm looking at what the 2019 roster, what the 2019 like roster said he was. So he was at 175 on last year's roster.
I certainly hope he didn't lose 9 pounds in the offseason.
That's not a great sign of anything.
No.
That's a concern.
Yeah, I mean, the heights and weights on these rosters are always like, I'm never super, involved with how they look, but because, obviously they fudge a lot of it, but like, I don't know why they would make Taj
lighter.
Like, 10 to 15 pounds lighter than he actually is. That doesn't seem to be giving us a competitive advantage in any way.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about that now.
Yeah, he's listed at 154 on the roster as well, so the 2020 roster. So that's weird.
Yeah, a little bit of red flag. Maybe somebody asked that in a press conference on Tuesday.
Did you lose 9 pounds?
Yeah. please share more because I'm very concerned. Anthony Quayle is going to start opposite him. Quayle is at 6'2", 193.
That's an interesting one. One of the more interesting things on this episode, I think.
Yeah, I think like, because I'm trying to backtrack quick. So last year, Quayle did not really see the field. Didn't catch any passes. I thought though that memory might serve incorrect here, but I thought we had heard that he was looking pretty solid in the offseason last year. And I think they wanted to just kind of preserve the shirt, but he's got the size. I mean, I'd love to see more of him. Obviously having Hendricks as a backup. Justin Barron's another surprising one. Somebody who we thought was maybe going to be a defensive end coming in ends up coming in as a wide receiver. 6'4", 208, so he's got some great size, and I think he's another guy who, similar to a Luke Benson type, creates some mismatches. Obviously, Benson's still got about 25 pounds on him, but having 6'4", 208-pound wide receiver is going to hurt if you're an ACC cornerback or safety.
Yeah, clearly Dino wants to get like his big guys on the outside, whether you have the two tight end sets, which I think have been alluded to. We talked about the possibility for it, but then I think they alluded to it in the last couple weeks in the press conferences as well, getting Hackett and Benson out there, which we're supportive of. But also then looking at Harris, Barron, and then Quayle and Hendricks, all 6'2 or taller, Barron and Hendricks being like, over 200 pounds, Quayle being 193, so, not a small receiver. But we clearly want to have those two positions with bigger guys and then have your Nikeems and your Sherrods in the slot. And I also imagine, like, I feel like if we have a two-receiver set, it's more likely that it's going to come from the Nikeem-Sherrod Johnson duo. Tory Jackson's the third on that list. If we're doing two receivers versus three, but it looks like, three receivers is our base here.
Yeah, agreed. And as you mentioned, like Nikeem is going to be your starter on the inside right now. Sherrod Johnson or Courtney Jackson will back him up. I'm pretty high on Courtney Jackson long-term. I think that Nikeem Johnson, though, earns the right to kind of keep his role for now. Last year really didn't go too well for inside receivers for Syracuse in general between Johnson struggles and Sean Riley struggles. Hopefully we see something more resembling Nikeem Johnson's 2018 efforts than what we saw in 2019. And if we get something resembling 2018, I definitely like our odds a lot more.
Yeah, there's a lot of playmaking. I like that whole spot. Like, I think all three of those guys should be contributors, if not this year, then down the road. But yeah, it should be a talented group. I think the receivers, we'll maybe have to pick up some slack now. I don't know if we become more pass-oriented than we had hoped going into the season. I know, we've talked about so much with when Central Michigan was rolling, or not Central Michigan, Bowling Green was rolling. Dino loved to have his like running backs really kind of carry the thing. It was kind of, if not a run first offense, it was a super balanced offense. And that might not be a possibility given what we have here, but we'll find out.
Agreed. Looking over at the defense, nothing necessarily surprising here. As we've mentioned, Josh Black and Kingsley Jonathan start on the outside. McKinley Williams will hold things down in the middle. Cody Roscoe and Caleb Okechukwu get involved in the rotation along with Curtis Harper on the interior. All that makes sense. Linebackers obviously get thrown for a little bit of a loop without Richards. Instead, you had Stephon Thompson, true freshman, on the strong side. Weak side will be manned by Mikel Jones. And then the middle linebacker position goes to Jeff Kanton-Narku. This still concerns me just because that, like, if Thompson was able to establish himself, beat out Linton, who seemed like he had at least some sort of hold on a starting role back in spring, like, great. And I'd love to see him get going. I think the interesting thing now here is that with Jones and Thompson starting, you're actually looking at something completely opposite of what Dino was talking about early in the offseason when he wanted bigger players at linebacker. And now you end up with, yeah, two linebackers at about 6'1 or shorter, and then just one linebacker at 6'4 or taller in Kanton-Narku.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'd say the one positive here is that we've had years past where our linebacker, since we had like the run of like just having really secure linebackers, there were years where we were like kind of had a weird group like this, but they were like older guys and JUCOs and whatnot. And this is a very young group. We're looking at what, two or three sophomores, two freshmen and a redshirt freshman across the two deep. So like,
only one actually like experienced player in the defense. Like Jones is the only person on this entire two deep for the linebackers to play any defensive snaps last year.
Yeah, so obviously, like, experience is a concern, and we've seen what happens when you have inexperienced linebackers, but I'd rather roll the dice with young guys than, like, trying to slap together some JUCOs and some seniors who haven't really played before, because at least there's a chance that they develop during the year and they can make up for missed assignments with athleticism. Obviously, Podba, who's the backup middle linebacker, and Jones were both, like, four-star-type recruits. I think Kanton-Narku is a super interesting guy. All the Canadians tend to kind of fly under the radar, so there's a good chance we get a diamond in the rough there. And then Thompson winning as a true freshman over a guy who was pretty installed, like Linton, as you said. Certainly interesting. Like, that doesn't happen by accident. So I'd say at least, like, you know, hopefully we get at least some fun, athletic, high upside play there. But I do expect that we'll have some real growing pains as well.
Yeah, and I think we're going to miss Richards a lot. And I think while we haven't necessarily seen a consistent output from him just because of position concerns and I mean, whether it was injuries or whatever, like, we haven't seen as much of Richards as I think we wanted to, considering, like, his reputation as being an athletic freak. And I think that his playmaking ability and pass rushing ability is really going to be missed this year.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was excited to see what he could do. He's been pretty vocal about his concerns about this whole situation, so it's not surprising to see him off of the depth chart. I guess we'll see if anything changes going forward, but doesn't sound like he's going to be joining us. Like, basically the only guy who it sounds like we might get back is Blyche if the NCAA comes through with like a true last second waiver decision, but I wouldn't bet on any of the other guys popping back up this week.
Yeah, same. Now last in the defense at least, we had some secondary shifts, even if the names are the same. It was kind of speculated last week that we could see some changes at the Rover position and in the safety positions. Eric Coley heads to the boundary safety position. Trill Williams actually moves over to free safety. And then in the Rover, Andre Sisco will be there, backed up by Ben LeBrosse, another true freshman from Canada. Dan, what's your kind of thought on, I mean, I think Steve did a really nice article last week talking about how Sisco could be used differently, or how at least, you know, being kind of very variant with Trill, Sisco, and Coley could provide some real benefits for SU. But what do you think about Sisco in the Rover role as opposed to his traditional safety spot?
I think it's kind of like a find your way to make your best defensive playmaker. It put him in his position to make those plays. Now, obviously, we've liked Sisco kind of protecting the deep field. He's gotten a lot of interceptions that way. But we've also seen him play up on the line a little bit. I think he has the athleticism to be a little bit more versatile. So I'm very intrigued by this whole thing. But it does seem like we're cross training a lot of our guys. Like, obviously, Melifonwu was playing cornerback. We know that. That's pretty set. But then between Coley and Sisco and Trill, even LeBrosse as a true freshman, it sounds like we're kind of cross training guys to be able to play a lot of different positions. A, to give us a little more flexibility if there are injuries or we like different matchups. But I'm just a fan of being able to plug guys into different spots. and get like the best possible group out there. So I'm definitely interested by this defensive backfield, even more so after seeing this, because it's not an accident that we're putting Sisto there. Like, clearly that's a position where we think he can make a lot of big things happen.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, like, just his ability, like, where he really thrived the most, like, I actually think at times for him against deep ball or when he was kind of boxed in, I did feel like he could try to do too much and it would create some problems in the back end of the defense. Now, as someone who can kind of literally rove around and really kind of pick his spots, I feel like he could be, this is something that we could really be unleashing him, and this could be what propels him into a first round draft pick.
Yeah, I mean, this is a spot where you see a lot more, there's a lot more utility here in the NFL this now. A lot of teams kind of implement players like this or have gotten more out of kind of, I wouldn't call Sisto a tweener, really. I think he could play safety at the NFL level, but like, it just seems like there's a lot more use for guys who have different skill sets, who aren't just your classic drop back, play deep, free safety. So definitely interested to see how we utilize him. I wouldn't be surprised if he was rushing the passer a little bit. Out of this, I think you're going to see a lot of interesting things from him.
Yeah, I agree. Corners, obviously, Fiti Melifonwu gets one spot, as expected. Garrett Williams gets the other, redshirt freshman, who will start over there. Neil Nunn is listed as a backup for him. Nunn was actually, I think, for the most part, thought of as a safety. So again, kind of gets to the point that you were making about us trying to crush train these guys and having a lot of players play different positions.
Yeah, it's also just interesting in general with this whole defense. Aside from the defensive line, we have a very young defense. Like Trill, Sisto, and Coley are, and Melifonwu, like we have the juniors there, but the entire linebacking core, and then Williams, and then guys like Nunn who will play, Chase Atkinson will probably get some time, the backups at the safety and rubber positions. Like, this is a, hopefully, if this year is kind of like a lost year for like a million reasons, hopefully we get a lot of good reps for these players so that we can really build on something with this defense heading forward. Not that I'm like ruling it out. I think this defense could be pretty good if the linebackers step up and the defensive backs are where we think they are. But I think even if the season kind of goes south because of the issues on offense, we might at least get like hopefully some good development on the defense on top of like some fun play from Williams and Sisto and the other guys that are like entrenched.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, you bring up so much youth. I mean, we'll see how much of this is due to opting out or injuries or whatever. But it's definitely odd, maybe, to see. I feel like we're young every year. Yeah. You know, somehow.
No, I agree. There's been like turnover in weird ways and weird like waves of it.
Yeah, like where like there's still been like, I don't necessarily know if it's a bad thing, but there's been a lot of attrition even now. Like I feel like every offseason we're losing like three to four guys. And at this point, a lot of them are like Dino recruits. So maybe the quality of the player coming in is getting better. Obviously, like I think every single year now we've seen like a couple freshmen pop up on the top of the depth chart within the first like few weeks of the season. So, you know, part of that, again, could be a product of just getting better players. Part of it could be guys not working out or scheme issues. I know we've changed schemes enough, too, that sometimes you just get like kind of recruited over as well.
Yeah, it's definitely like hopefully kind of an optimistic read on it. But, you know, we'll find out, especially with these defensive backs, we'll find out a lot this weekend.
Yeah. Last on the depth chart before we get to kind of halftime and everything, as kind of posited by us a couple weeks ago, well, yeah, it was like 2 or 3 weeks, James Williams looks like did not beat Nolan Cooney for the punting job. So he seems like a possible redshirt this year with Cooney being a redshirt senior. It seems like the walk-on will be able to beat the punter, at least for now. As long as he performs well, he'll probably hold off Williams, which is good for us because Williams was a highly regarded punter. So if we can get an extra year of him like we did with Hoffrichter, it's not a bad deal.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see like Cooney, who wasn't regarded as like a star player like our other punters. And again, that's a whole snoopy thing. We've had like a run of like 4 or 5 quote-unquote star punters in a row. Cooney doesn't totally fit that bill, but also like he could just step in and be really good. So he's certainly been around enough guys at the position who can be good. And if we can get a fifth year out of James Williams, then it should be a good situation moving forward. So hopefully Cooney is good for the job and can keep things going, be a nice little bridge.
I would agree. Before we get to halftime, did want to give a shout out to our sponsor for today, kind of our sponsor really for like this month. or so, I guess, Homefield Apparel is working with Noon's Magician. Homefield has incredibly comfortable vintage collegiate apparel. We just launched over the weekend. Some might have seen the post and resulting Twitter shenanigans over on Big News Saturday. Hopefully you used your 20% off Big Noon's code on Saturday, but if not, you can now use a 10% off code for Noon's and get 10% off your purchase over there this time around. Dan, do you have a favorite shirt thus far?
I think it's probably a boring pick. I just think the Strip Q shirt is killer. I ordered one of those. I ordered a lot of other stuff. I spent way too much money on shirts this weekend. Luckily, 20% less than I would have otherwise. But no, I got a. I mean, Vita the Dote's amazing. My one concern with Vita the Dote is that like it's such an obscure reference. but I also during our Saturday onslaught in which we passed UConn for sales in their first week. Tweeted out that we should just bring a goat back. I think we just totally just throw it back. It's 100 years since we had a live goat mascot. Let's bring Vita back. Keep Otto, obviously. But yeah, I would totally be down for being the stool with a live goat mascot for no reason and also an orange. And then I think most of the shirts look really good, so you can't really go wrong. Actually, the kind of 90s style, like weird like word art style Syracuse U shirt was pretty cool. I got one of those. The Otto shirt's great. I mean there's just a lot of good options. They really did us well, I thought. So yeah, go grab some comfy shirts in time for football season.
Yeah, Vita the Goat, obviously a favorite of mine. I already have a Vita the Goat shirt, but might have to buy another one. I have another great home field shirt from Tulane, obviously. That one is definitely a favorite, but yeah, I think the Script Q shirt was one that a lot of people talked about, and then another one that people really seemed to like was the Loud House one.
I got a Loud House too. I ordered one of those
with the random like kind of series with the random like image that we have for the dome.
I think that will age well because like it'll be. I mean that's going to be a real kind of retro piece very soon here, since you know that dome logo is probably going to be going away soon since our new roof is all fancy and not dome like.
Watch, we just leave it. I mean, or if they tried to stylize something like the current roof, I feel like it would go terribly wrong.
It would look dumb. I mean, well, I think that's the Vikings did that, right? I think they have a, I don't know if it's a stadium that has a stylized like logo that looks like the slanted roof. I don't know that our roof is going to be like signature enough. Not that it doesn't look cool. I think it looks great based on what we've seen so far. It just doesn't have like that weird Viking slant thing that makes like a really specific image. But I mean, if someone wants to design a cool logo for our new, formerly known as the Terrier Dome Stadium, I guess definitely still known as the Terrier Dome Stadium, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I agree. If people want to try their hand at that, go for it. So yeah, use the Noon's code for 10% off on Homefield whenever you guys want to buy some new shirts in time for season or just in the middle of the season, whenever. But changing topics a little bit, Dan, what have you been drinking of late?
A fair amount. I went over to Evil Twin Brewing, their actual new-ish brewery, yesterday. They have a lot of really good stuff going right now. They're Even More Hydra, which is a super fruity milkshake-style sour, is one of the crazier beers I think I've ever had. It drinks just like an actual smoothie, but it's super strong. I think it's 7%. It's sitting at like almost a 4.8 on Untappd, which like just doesn't really happen very much. I know it's sold out in cans like right away, but they had it on tap. Really delicious, very heavy, but super drinkable. Just really one of the more interesting beers I've had in a long time. Their double rice peach double IPA was also very good. They master alcohol like very dangerously here at Evil Twin. And then I also have their not your typical spice peach cobbler or pear cobbler, which might have actually been the best beer I had from them yesterday. An IPA, a sour IPA, kind of pear flavor, but with like a real like a lot of autumn in this one. Definitely a fall beer. Definitely had some like spice, some fall spices, some nutmeg, probably some milk sugar. Really delicious. And then some decent IPAs from them. Right now, I'm drinking from Bottomless Brewing in Geneva, actually, soda bread red, which is actually a really nice, like kind of balanced, easy drinkable crowler that I'm having. So a good beer weekend overall.
Very nice. I'm jealous. I just finished up some Russian River stuff, the Mine Circus, Flying for President, what else was there? Row 2, Hill 56, all beers I mentioned in some previous episodes. Also had, courtesy of Steve, on the blog, a bottle of Anna from Hill Farmstead, their honey farmhouse ale, which I will contend is one of the better large format beers for $10 or less in the country. And there really aren't a lot of like comparable beers either. Like it's just not, this is not a style that like a lot of people like mess around with, at least for like honey, say farmhouse ales, yes. But like honey farmhouse ales, no, there's just not like a lot of beers like it out there. And I think, again, one of the better beers for $10 or less that you're going to find in a 750 milliliter bottle. Pretty excellent all around. And I, anyone who does get regular access to Hill Farmstead stuff, I would highly recommend you pick some up.
Yeah, I mean, Hill Farmstead kills it all the time. I haven't had any of their stuff in a while, but it's pretty accessible in the Northeast. It's, I mean, they're just so good all the time.
Agreed. All right, let's talk a little bit about North Carolina, Syracuse's first opponent. No, I am not rooting for the Tar Heels, to clear that up for anybody wondering. We're kind of going to just go through the depth chart a little bit, talk about some key spots where they might be able to gain an advantage or not. Oh, and look, some breaking news here. Enrique Cruz commits to Syracuse. Let's go.
Oh, I haven't even seen this. Let me.
Literally just popped. 4-star offensive tackle. Enrique Cruz just committed.
Yeah, I see Mike Kavanaugh's tweet. Very exciting. Yeah. Big push for wide receivers from us recently.
Well, this is an easy tackle, but.
Oh.
You're about Victor Cruz.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what happened. Kavanaugh posted a Victor Cruz gif, and I just, like, mentally somehow that put wide receiver in my head. Because I hadn't even seen what position he was. So, offensive tackle. So, also helpful, as we've put out. 4-star on 24/7 sports, which is awesome. Probably a fringe die in terms of the composite. Looks like some good offers. Arizona State, Indiana. Chicago guy or Chicago area guy.
He's picked up a slew of offers lately.
This is exciting.
Yeah. I think when I last looked at, he's from Illinois, Willowbrook. He's Willowbrook High School. He's from Villa Park, Illinois. Yeah. Arizona State, Indiana. What other offers were there lately? Kansas, Louisville, Memphis, Mississippi State, OK State, Temple, Toledo, Utah, Wake, West Virginia. Like, this is a solid list.
He's our second top 500 commit. It looks like he's number 2 in our class behind Deuce Chestnut for 24/7's composite. This is good work. And then we got Amari Hatcher a couple days ago, who was the wide receiver I was referring to, who is our third-ranked commit. This class is – I'm a big fan. I think this is probably obviously the 2018 class. We've talked about at length, like, did the ratings weren't, you know, what you expect from an elite class, but some of the players turned so good that that's what you're looking for. And this definitely profiles as that kind of class on paper, at least.
Yeah, I agree. And realistically, like, the class only gets dinged a bit by the fact that a lot of these guys weren't able to get evaluated enough. I think some of these guys are just kind of, you know, under-scouted or under-recruited in many ways, just because of the state of the world and everything. You also have just kind of some of the recruiting sketchiness around, you know, like Chestnut's ranking falling after he committed. Cruz is like a top, just outside top 200 on 24/7, but he's, he's in the composite inside the top 500. There's a lot of like rankings weirdness, and I think that's just going to be the case for a lot of these guys this year, given the situation where there aren't so many in-person camps.
Yeah, I'm looking at Rivals. I assume that's where so he doesn't even have a position ranking on Rivals. He's just a 3-star, but I assume they just haven't had a chance to evaluate him. So it's like, I think that's pretty easy to see where the issue is there. Like, if Rivals is able to see him in camp, he's, you know, even if they rank him below what 24/7 is, there's a decent chance he ends up being a composite 4-star kid. And then if he ranks like in the top, you know, 600 or 700 for Rivals even, and that's saying like there's even a big gap there, then it shoots up his composite rating a lot, and he's, you know, maybe the first hit in our list though. But either way, it's exciting to get a hit of that caliber. And the, you know, after getting Deuce Chestnut at cornerback last month, so definitely I think our best class in at least a few years, and a chance to be our best class in a long time.
Yeah, no, I completely agree there. But yeah, well, we still have some time here. Talk a little bit about North Carolina. Sam Howell was last year one of the better freshmen in the country at any position. And I mean, he can't necessarily, given the fewer games, he's not going to, might not improve on the 3,600 yards and 38 touchdowns as a true freshman last year. But I do see him being very, very good. I think that it presents an interesting test right off the bat for Syracuse and that secondary and kind of all those changes that we alluded to. I think the 3-3-5 is going to be a good scheme to go up against a player like that. But I also think that if there are still some kinks to work out, that we're going to see them very quickly in that first game. If for some reason we're able to lock down him, Michael Carter and Javonte Williams are both very good running backs from last year. And I'm not super hopeful that we're going to be able to both stop the passing game and the run game. I think North Carolina is still going to be able to put up points, and this very well could be a bit of a track meet. I know last year from a rushing perspective, you know, Carter had just over 1,000 yards, but only 3 touchdowns. Javonte Williams had just short of 1,000 yards and 5 touchdowns. They've also got some other experienced players in the backfield as well. From a receiving perspective, this is one of the better receiving cores in the country. Dyami Brown, 1,000 yards, 12 touchdowns. Daz Newsome, 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns. Bo Corrales, another guy who like can, you know, make big plays, find the end zone. Like this is just a scary group to go up against, and I think that this becomes a real like. This is, even if SU's secondary is good and ready to go, I think this becomes a point of concern for us.
Yeah, this is a really well balanced offense. As you said, they had, you know, almost 2,000 yard rushers last year. I don't know that they'll have that this year with the fewer games, but you're looking at two guys who could get there in a normal season. The Howell, one of the best quarterbacks, maybe the second best quarterback in the ACC. That might not even be like super controversial to say. Coming off of like, and that was even like with some growing pains last year. He really rounded into form the back half of the season, was one of the best quarterbacks in the country in the last 5 games for them. Super scary. And then you add in like, I think his 5 top receivers are back, including Brown and Newsom, the 2,000 yard guys. It's concern. I think to beat them, we're going to have to outscore them. They definitely have more to prove on defense. They lose a fair amount from the defensive line. They had 3 defensive backs opt out. The only major one, I think, is DJ Ford, who might have started for them, but the other two were reserve players. But in any case, it's not great for them. We have to hope their offensive line doesn't have the same kind of improvement that we're hoping our offensive line does. It was pretty bad last year, but it brought back, I think, 6 guys with starting experience. There's a chance they were going to turn a corner. They did lose their left tackle, Charlie Hecht, to the NFL, who was probably their best lineman last year. So it's a challenge. I think they can be had over the top. Their defensive bats were opportunistic, not unlike ours. They had 14 picks last year, and like guys like Storm Duck are really good, but they do give up big plays in the passing game. So, I mean, I think that's the pathway to win. I think we need a really, really good DeVito game to kind of outgun Howell. And that's a tough task. Howell, I think, is the real deal.
And has, like, more experienced guys to throw to, has more experienced running backs. Storm Duck, shout out to him for having one of the better names in college football. Absolutely worth acknowledging anytime you talk about North Carolina. Also, think Chaz Surratt's one of the, if not the best linebacker in the conference, the former quarterback. Just been a real powerhouse since he switched positions. This team has just gotten so much more talented over time, and they are they're going to be a handful, even for like what I hope Syracuse fans do, because we're not used to having like measuring stick games, or like we're not used to facing tough teams like this in week one. I just hope the overreactions don't start pouring in if we lose by like 15 and like just kind of get derailed at the end, because this is a legitimate like top 25 squad and a squad that has been recruiting at a top 30 level. And I just think that like SU can still be very good, or at least like much improved this year, and still lose this game by a couple scores.
Yeah, on paper, like, I think they are the, I don't know if they are odds-wise the Atlantic or the Coastal favorite, but I would pick them, I think. I don't remember who I did pick. But I think UNC just looked really, really talented. They were, last year, they were 7-6. They were 3-6 in one-score games. They lost, every game they lost was by 7 or fewer points. And they, you know, they won a couple of those games as well, but they were playing close.
Also, almost beat Clemson.
They should have beaten Clemson. They lost 21-20. They lost to Vatek on the road in 6 overtimes. They lost to Pitt in overtime. They lost to conference or division champ UVA by 1 touchdown. They lost by 3 to Appalachian State in, like, early in the season after, you know, when they were still kind of finding themselves. So it's this team, like, that can cut both ways, but this team was not far off from putting together, like, a really, really impressive first year under Mack Brown. So, and they bring back the most of their team. Like, they lose a little bit in the defensive line, a little bit in the defensive backfield, but and one good offensive lineman. But it's a really strong group, and one that, like, is definitely way ahead of schedule. I assume that we were probably pretty low on the Mack Brown hire. Similar reasons why we were low on, you know.
Well, he also almost hired Greg Robinson as a defense coordinator first time around.
That's true, and he did hire Greg Robinson as defensive coordinator in his last year at Texas. So, like, it's not like he had a lot of, like, great outgoing memories from those last 4 or 5 seasons at Texas. And his recruiting was questionable. He famously passed up on, I think he wanted RG3, Johnny Manziel, and Patrick Mahomes to play safety. So those were all good decisions. Didn't get any of them. Didn't get Andrew Luck, who reportedly wanted to go there, at least, you know, potentially. Didn't get Jameis Winston, who he recruited. Basically hasn't had a good quarterback since Colt McCoy. But now Sam Howell looks like very much that. But he's done a really good job of kind of implementing, you know, what he wants recruiting-wise, has sold the program really well. Is, you know, this is a program that I think a lot have identified as, like, one of those sleeping giants in the ACC for a long time. They're a good brand name. They're in a talent-rich state. That hasn't always come about. Obviously, Fedora had some decent years, but it seems like Mack Brown, he made good coordinator hires after almost hiring Greg Robinson. They've, you know, it just seems like they're, like, a year or two ahead of schedule, and that's really unfortunate for us, drawing this game randomly based on a completely, like, you know, unforeseeable ACC situation.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think that this North Carolina team is kind of a worst case scenario for Syracuse from a scheduling perspective, and I'm not thrilled to see them on there at all, but never mind at the very start. Dan, I'll kind of give my prediction and we can hear kind of yours and why. I've got UNC 40, Syracuse 27. I just think that, again, I think there's too many offensive weapons, even a better secondary, even a secondary that really works in the 3-3-5 scheme, is going to have a hard time stopping all those weapons we mentioned. I think, you know, a lot's going to ride on their offensive line, same as ours. And I feel like our offensive line, even if it figures it out eventually, with Elmore at guard, that's still going to take a bit. And I think that it's just a rough opponent in week one. So I think SU surprises in the second half and actually, like, hangs around for a bit, but ultimately loses by a couple scores.
Yeah, I'm doing Syracuse 42, or no, not Syracuse, UNC 42, Syracuse 24. So an 18-point loss. Just think it's going to be tough to outshoot this team, given our concerns on the offensive line and the running game in general. And it's just, like, I think UNC is at best when you make them one-dimensional. They were 5-0 when they ran for 200 yards or more last year. I think it's going to be a struggle to make them, like, a pass-first team if we can't, like, put up some big points early. So hopefully we hang with them, but I think this is going to be a pretty definitive one.
Yeah, and again, I just hope everybody, like, for really the whole season, but especially this game, just kind of hangs around and understands that, like, the first game in particular, it's going to be rough because of just how good UNC is. And I think, you know, facing a really good Pitt defense in week two is not really going to be a walk in the park either. That said, like, there's too many factors to like UNC here. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope everybody's wrong. I hope Syracuse pulls off a nice week one upset, but I'm not going to bank on it. They might cover. I mean, I picked them to cover there at least.
I guess I did too. That line's really big. 22.5 is a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot, especially between like two conference foes. And again, we'll just see kind of what I think the Syracuse offensive line and Syracuse secondary are going to dictate this one. And that might be the case for a lot of these games.
Yeah, I mean, if we pick off Howell, and Howell was not a super interception-prone player last year, I think he had 7. If we can pick him off a few times and swing, you know, maybe get some big plays, obviously that goes a long way in any game, but, you know, maybe that's a position where we kind of put them on their heels. But if we're just trying to play them straight up, they're just a more talented offense, unfortunately. But like you said, I think hopefully our fans don't, like, freak out too much if this one gets ugly, because this UNC team, I mean, they have very high expectations for a reason. They should be, I mean, they're the most talented offense in the Coastal, I think, by far, and could be like our legit top 20 team this year. So with the challenges we have, I think it's tough to get super worked up unless like this is like really uglier than even it should be.
Yeah, agreed. I feel like I'm not going to enjoy being on Twitter in the second half of this one. Although, who knows, maybe I won't be watching at all based on the current timeline says I'm still safe, but that can change on a dime.
I'll be watching because it's going to be my birthday, and what else would I do on my birthday but watch my team maybe get plucked?
Yeah, that sounds about right based on Andy's birthday post.
Yep, that's it's generally what I do.
Anyway, Dan, anything else before we head out today?
No, even after a pretty dreary prediction, still did Syracuse football back. Hopefully no more bad surprises, maybe some good surprises before Saturday, but in any case, it was fun to have a little bit of football this Saturday, and it'll be this past Saturday, and it'll be fun to have a more full slate this coming Saturday. So hopefully we're both wrong and Syracuse comes and lights the world on fire.
Agreed. That would be awesome. All right, Dan, thank you as always for joining.
Yes, always a pleasure.
All right, for right now, you'll be hearing me next week, but that might change. If that does, don't be too surprised to hear some combination of Dan, Andy, Steve, Kevin, others. I don't know. Anyway,
we'll get the super friends out. It'll be a party.
Yeah, you might enjoy it more than the regular podcast. Who knows?
It'll be substitute teacher week. It'll be great.
Yeah,
put on a VHS.
Yeah, you'll watch. You'll throw on the Titanic and say, "Just take notes." Perfect. All right. That was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy Noon's Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, Megaphone, on Spotify's TuneIn, Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts, and go Orange.
Go Orange.